coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, your other host, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Doomed! We're all doomed, I tell you!
Cole is riding a shotgun in my souped-up 76 Mustang Fastback. He will be playing the part of the Australian
doomed.
Shepherd. Who, by
doomed,
the way,
I tell you,
was the hero of every Mad Max movie.
Damned, I tell you!
Damned! Somewhere right now, Stu is loading a gun.
Sorry about that, Stu. He said Australian Shepherd. I didn't think he meant the dog. I thought he meant like someone whose profession was herding sheep. Who's from Australia?
He literally is loading a gun. He's just shirtless with a bottle of Jack Daniels, loading a gun somewhere right now, and he doesn't know why. But he will. Oh my God, Cole. We did it again. We did it again.
We have.
Don't know how.
It's ironic here. On the cusp of completing a story arc, I have already taken a glimpse, rather ironically because of today's topic, a glimpse into the future.
Yes.
Our next arc.
Oh, no.
The long-awaited by no one but us, because we haven't exactly announced it, but we are going to bring you the sequel to the Batman Rogues Gallery, Roguish Eyes.
Nice.
But it's not about Batman anymore.
Oh, nice.
We're going to look in an entirely different Rogues Gallery. And that's all I'm going to tell you right now. But that's coming up probably in about a month and a half.
There you go. But tonight, we've explained the Campbellian cycle that we go through during a story arc, where it's the first one and we're getting our feet wet and we're very excited. It's like a new relationship. And then the second one, we're kind of settling in. By the third one, we hit our peak. The fourth one, we get into thinking that we're finished and we don't know what we're talking about. And then by the fifth one, we're sort of foot off the gas a little bit. We're eased in. We got an eye on the future by that one. But tonight, we definitely have an eye on the future, because we're talking about the future Tokyo, the future.
I tell ya!
And so much of it is doom and gloom, but what is the title of this issue, Cole?
This is the final chapter of I Think I'm Turning Japanese. This is I Go Neo Tokyo.
Oh my God, I can't wait. So, I'm going to preface...
The illustrations by manga Walt Kelly.
Manga Windsor Smith will be doing all
this, like, pogo possum wearing a Kira jacket on one of those kick-ass motorcycles that look like an escape from Tron.
Well, and that's the thing, right? As we ease on down into this road, I will say this: I've been tainted by this issue by just yesterday watching the new Blade Runner movie. And
I didn't see that yet.
It's beautiful. It's not a bad movie. It is a Herculean task to take on the original Blade Runner and attempt to make something comparable. And I think that they did make something comparable. I'm not going to go into any detail because, spoilers are a thing that I don't want to engage in. But they did a decent job. I want all of Ryan Gosling's wardrobe. I'm just going to start dressing for the apocalypse now, for the dystopian future now. I'm going to get a jump start. Man.
Speaking of dystopian future, this is exactly where we're headed. So good thing you got your clothes all lined up, you fashion hound.
I'm attempting to. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like I want to get that jump. I think it's going to happen pretty quick. So I want to get ahead of the game.
Well, if you're going to go, may as well leave a good-looking corpse.
Yeah, right. I don't want my best-dressed days as a corpse, so I'm doing it now.
But how do you choose the last suit you'll ever wear when you have the opportunity to make that choice?
That's true.
Not to put extra weight on
you. God, this is getting dark. This issue is getting dark already. Within the first 10 minutes.
And ironically, you know, speaking of dark manga in the research for this issue, I just kind of stumbled on something, an article about a manga very recently, I take it, released by the officials in prefecture of Hokkaido, which is a northern Japanese island, that is basically a manga, what to do should Kim Jong-un go nuts and fire missiles at Japan.
So wait, okay, so this is important on a couple levels, right? Number one, yeah, it speaks to what we are talking about tonight. But number two, you said that this is an official?
Yeah, apparently it is an official government publication. It's not a big, it's not like one of those square bound manga that you see over at Barnes and Noble, or is Barnes and Noble still around? I don't know.
Yeah, Barnes and Noble is still around. Yeah.
Okay. Thank God I picked the right one.
You didn't say Borders.
Yeah, and then I outed myself by saying I didn't know which the hell one was the right one.
We're not getting letters on that.
I imagine we'll get letters on some, but it isn't gonna be that.
You ain't wrong.
It's apparently like a 4-page manga. You know, very much in the manga style. If you're like me and don't read Japanese, if you just saw these panels by themselves, you might think that it's part of a larger story that maybe is the setup for some kind of Ultraman tale or something. But the harsh reality is this is like pre-dystopia.
Oh,
this
man.
Is the sort of thing that, like, somebody's going to come along and, you know, brush aside a couple of crusty orange rocks and you know, you think it's Mars, and they pull this thing out, you realize it was Earth.
This is that scene in the new Godzilla movie right before the Let Them Fight part where they go into the destroyed village that's kind of been ossified in time.
Yeah,
and they start finding
the What to Do with Godzilla attacks pamphlets.
yeah apparently they weren't read thoroughly enough.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't. So should we get into the socio-political stuff right off the top? Because I kind of want to.
I think that I inadvertently gave a springboard for that.
You did.
You have been approved for heading in that direction.
For launch, I've been approved for launch. So my thing is, like, in my research, right, you and I talked about this off mic a little bit, and that's when you start seeing this, and whether it's, you know, Eastern manga or whether it's Western comic books, anything set in the future, right, generally I would say 90% is set in a dystopian future, of a future where there is extreme either lawlessness or extreme authority, and sometimes at the same time. You know, when you look at things like really frankly anything that's kind of cyberpunk in nature, you see that. Which is very interesting. Here's the thing about future-based manga and anime, as it were, right? We're going to get letters. I don't care. I feel a certain way, and you guys can deal with it or get your own show and tell me I suck.
AndySucks.com.
When you introduce two generations to literal dystopia, this is what comes out the other side. Akira comes out the other side. Ghost in the Shell comes out the other side. And what I mean by that is, when you drop two atomic bombs on a country, that affects the zeitgeist in the way that they view the future. All of a sudden, you get things like Wastelands, or everybody like Neo Tokyo, Mega Tokyo. You get this idea of a tightened up society where everything is one giant city that's built on top of each other over and over again until it's just miles high, but it doesn't sprawl. Giant walls, everything outside being lawlessness. All of that stuff exists because you've now introduced this idea of temporary, of non-permanence. You've introduced this idea.
Absolutely. Well, let me bring into perspective.
Sorry, I'll soapbox all night about this, so please.
A real world example of why this sort of dystopian future is so prevalent in manga, or at least, you know, I'm speculating heavily here because I don't believe this man was personally involved in any publications whatsoever.
Okay.
Okay. But imagine, if you will, living in a country that is not, you know, the largest piece of real estate that has sovereign borders out there. Now, certainly not the smallest. I believe that's Andorra. But
it's not the island of Morocco?
I'm not sure. We'll debate that another time. Actually, I think the smallest sovereign state is actually the Vatican.
You're right. They also just, the coolest.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
they got John Merrick's bones down there.
Well, and they've got those kick-ass, like, Johnny Walker, those beefeater, their own, like, conquistador beefeaters.
Conquisteaters? Yeah, they got those out there.
Yeah, they're out there eating cornquistos from back in the 80s.
Cornquistos!
Now I've got people craving cornquistos.
Motherfuckers out there eating bugles with their giant halberds.
That's right. But this, I want to impart something that was brought up on the radio one time on this sort of like little factoids they'll spit out about an individual who apparently passed away in 2010 at the age of 93, Sumatu Yamaguchi.
All letters to Jedi Cole at...
Yeah, if I have butchered the name, my apologies to his survivors, to all of Japan, and frankly, the world. Yamaguchi was working in Hiroshima when the first bomb was dropped. Then he survived that bomb.
Oh, my God.
Then, as fate would have it, he was in Nagasaki.
Jesus!
3 kilometers from ground zero, apparently.
Did he just, like, take a train, poor guy? Was he just like, I'm getting out of here? Like,
and you know, God bless the man. He lived to a ripe old age, despite having been hanging around the two worst weapon, the aftermath of the... But imagine, you know, this is a country that survived and thrived after such a stopgap that the world had never known.
Oh, yeah. And the biggest way possible.
You have to imagine that there is so much part of the cultural vernacular. We can't even, I mean, you and I grew up in the Cold War.
Yes.
And we have zero frame of reference.
Right, none.
For what Japan survived.
But in talking to, you know, old Hollywood, old Hollywood has spent his fair share of time in Japan. He actually lived in Japan. He taught English as a second language in Japan. And then, you know, other people I know that have been, you don't talk about what I can't think of another way to say it. You don't talk about what we as Americans did to Japan. That's not discussed. So that's repressed. And like all repression comes out in art. And that's what we see in books like we're going to talk about tonight, which is, you know, books like my biggest, you know, my introduction to manga, and we talked about it in the first issue of this story arc, as well as anime. And I think it probably goes to a lot of people this way, and that's things like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and Godzilla. And, you know, if you want to talk about the then how that trickles over into American comics.
Yes, absolutely.
Old Man Logan. My favorite one issue comic book that I think that has ever been released, and again, Rob Liefeld was absolutely involved in this. The comic book adaptation of a little known cult classic movie that I am lucky enough to have seen, but I don't know very many people that have, Six String Samurai.
I can't say that I have
Cole.
Seen it.
Oh man. Oh, we'll get into Six String Samurai. Do not let me off the hook on Six String Samurai, because I can talk about Six String Samurai forever. But let's talk about some themes that we've picked up on from a Neo-Tokyo standpoint. So when we're talking about Neo-Tokyo, when we're talking about the idea of a future Japan, Cole, what comes to mind for you when you start thinking about it?
I think, like most Americans, the first thing you think of, because its popularity made it almost ubiquitous in its day was Akira.
Oh, you've got to.
Everybody was talking about Akira, be it the manga or the anime or the popsicles or the, the socks. You know, there was no part of life for a period that wasn't touched by Akira.
It was the, you've got to see this shit.
Yeah.
Of and, my generation.
Know, and so much so that people were just completely, you know, head exploding.
no pun intended,
when,
Cole?
when McFarlane Toys, came out with a series of Akira. I wouldn't go so far as to call anything McFarlane put out back then action figures, but figures to be sure. And I think everybody wanted that damn bike.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the those like the Judge Dredd mega cycle and the there's like a handful of iconic, like the Bat cycle, that are iconic motorcycles.
Well, it's funny that you should mention Judge Dredd in conjunction with Akira, because there are a lot of through lines that I noticed, you know, when I watched it and in reading Judge Dredd, a lot of through lines between the two.
That's true, because both of them present a level of dystopia that leaves you wondering, you know, where does anybody get necessities like, you know, Cap'n Crunch or a roll of toilet paper? I mean, there's nothing there.
No, there's nothing left.
Where are you going to get livestock or produce? But you're meant to not worry about that. Just trust that everyone's eating rocks or something. It's okay. Just live with it.
Well, I mean, and the story of Akira is a literal, it's close to a literal allegory as you can get to the end of World War II, in the sense that it starts with a nuclear explosion, and in Tokyo, and they have to move Tokyo to its own, like, barge, giant floating barge city that just built, much like, what's the name of the city in Judge Dredd? Mega City?
Mega City 1, yeah.
Mega City 1, where it's just built on top of itself. Instead of being a sprawling city, it's just built on top of itself over and over again, making this giant, impenetrable, seafaring fortress. But Kaneda, who is, you know, the I don't want to call him the hero of the Akira, but Kaneda is, you know, he is transformed, I guess, in some way by the nuclear explosion and becomes what we would in the comic book industry, in the Marvel comic book, become a mutant.
Yes, indeed. I know. It kind of comes down to that whole idea of, like, the brilliantly addressed, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show before, but in the independent comic, I think from First Comics, E-Man.
Yes, yes.
Back in the day, there was a great, you know, I never really followed, but I went up with a couple of issues at one point, and there was this brilliant little scene where they're trying to track the radioactive trail of something to find their antagonist. And this detective asks E-Man, you know, he's kind of recounting all the fact that there's so much radiation, so much residual radioactive material everywhere. He's like, there's even a radioactive spider. And he's like, yeah, you think if it bit me, I'd get you think if it bit somebody, they'd get superpowers? And the detective's like, no, what they'd get is radiation poisoning, and then they'd get dead. But that's the wonderful thing about, you know, when science replaced magic as your resource for superpowers.
Right. Oh, man. So, yeah, that's sort of the...
It's your springboard. It's your first one's free, kid. I honestly think that Akira was probably the entree for a great many American manga fans into manga.
Oh,
because that was the one that they heard about. That was the hip one.
Well, but and it's cool, right? But it also speaks to what I was saying earlier in the show, which is this idea of absolute authority being met by I don't want to say absolute lawlessness in this case, even though there are tons of gangs. They're the clown, you know, they're the clown gangs. There are tons of crazy gangs. almost Warriors style.
I was gonna say it's like Warriors without Luther.
But the other
Tetsuo,
side,
come out and play.
Is the
yeah, I know a little bit about it.
The real bent is this comes out in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
And it's this, it's the power of organized anti-authoritarianism. You know, sticking it to the man. And that's what, you know, that's what the sci-fi does. We are talking about, and I want you to speak to this a little bit because, you know, it's disheartening when you start doing research for a show like this and the only stuff that you can find is doom and gloom. It's all the end of the end of something.
Yeah. In fact, we had talked a bit before the show about the fact that, you know, there's so much dystopian future. Was there ever a utopian future? And I had to point out that, yes, there was at one time, perpetuated or brought forth by none other than Gene Roddenberry in the form of Star Trek.
Right.
But even Star Trek has become dystopian.
Even Star Trek fell to dystopia.
Yeah, so they cross the tracks from the utopian side of town into the dystopian, and that's pretty much the end of it.
Right. Yeah, God. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Akira was subversive. I think Akira was beautiful. I think it was artfully made. The story was strong. The art was amazing. And all of a sudden, you had this real kind of central entree point into American culture with this, you know, to back up Astro Boy. To back up, you know, your this is your second book or your first book, depending on your generation, to crack into suburban America, and it worked. And now you have an in, and now you can tell the story. Now you have your Ghost in the Shells and your other cyberpunkian neo-future Philip K. Dickian stories that you can tell. It's great. And I loved Akira. The first time I watched it, I was like, what the shit am I watching? This is amazing. Never seen anything like this in my entire life. I am hooked. And I didn't look back after Akira. What was your first Akira experience, Cole?
It's hard to say because I was probably working at Diamond when it was really beginning to hit in this country. And of course had the loan at one point of the anime.
Yeah.
So I think the anime was probably the larger exposure.
Okay.
And I'm gonna get mail about this, but I just was decidedly unimpressed.
Really?
Visually stunning, yet to me, like, what the hell did I just watch?
Did you ever come around on it?
I just did not. I've never tried to pursue it again, but I'm actually moderately considering giving it a second chance.
Well, this, I think if this story
there's clearly a lot of stuff I just completely glossed over.
Well,
and maybe I'm getting it confused with some tentacle porn supernatural Beastie City that I also had the loan of.
I think that Yorosuga Doshi is a different animal altogether, but I think we were talking before the show about this too, that, you know, what this story arc has done for us is the same thing that we hope that all 256 issues of Hey Kids Comics have done for anybody that reads it, including, or listens to it, including us, which is, you know, change your relationship with these topics and open your eyes, because my eyes are open in ways I never gave a shot to a lot of things that after this, you better believe I'm going back and reading. Because in my research and looking into this, there's some really cool, not only really cool shit out there that I need to get my hands on, but also culturally relevant things that I need to read that I haven't read. You know, when I'm reading this stuff and then I have to explain to people the fact that in the last issue of whatever DC comic, Cole, I'm gonna tell you this. I don't care. It's out now, and I don't want to be the one that has to do this to you, but I feel like it should come from a friend and a brother. So New DC You know that they're currently folding Watchmen back into the actual DC universe, correct? We've talked about that.
I have my thumbs in hand.
Okay, so seminal scene in Watchmen, probably my favorite scene visually, and beyond visually, emotionally, is the scene where the comedian gets murdered.
Yes.
You have that scene, that beautifully rendered Gibbons scene where he's kicked out the window and it pans, it keeps panning out from the window. You get the initial window break and then it pans out and pans out and pans out and pans out.
Exactly.
And they cut it off before he hits. You never see him hit the ground.
Yeah, I mean, you're given the aftermath and that's enough.
Well, Cole, in the new DC book, where it cuts off, he lands in the DC universe next to Dr. Manhattan. So now the comedian is alive in the DC universe.
Oh, God.
Because Dr. Manhattan took him there when he fell versus him dying in Watchmen. So compare that to Lone Wolf and Cub. Compare that to Akira.
So the difference is art v. commercialism.
Yeah, I would say so.
When you get right down to it, that's what's at play.
Art versus relativism. Art versus, well, you know, like I said, art permanence. We're talking about tradition and permanence when we talk about manga, when we talk about anime.
Well, I want to point out, though, that apparently Kaneda.
Oh, no.
Is actually saved by Dr. Manhattan as well.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah, is he?
In new Akira 2, the Manhattan Project.
Oh, damn it. The Manhattan. He's dropped into New York. Is that what happens? And he has to fight anti-authoritarianism there.
He winds up in Neo York.
Neo York. Which we were talking about the weird and I want to talk about this trope because it always cracks me up. Like I said, I just watched the new Blade Runner 2049. But every one of these, even the really hacky ones, you know, the asylum type pictures, there's that, what I can only refer to as Neo Creole that they speak, where it's that weird combination of Japanese and English that everybody speaks. And I get the running it out to the nth degree, right? I get taking the idea of something. The idea of, you know, Japanese culture and the influence on the world and let's say New York or American culture eventually have to kind of dovetail into one. And over time, there's going to be this weird universal language that combines the two. I get that, and it's a really cool idea. I just think it's kind of hacky at this point. That's all. I just think it gets a little hacky at some point where you're like, all right. But speaking of the future and tradition, the next thing I really want to talk about is a Valiant comic book that I was aware of and read a little, but didn't really get until they re-released it in 2014. They didn't re-release it. They made a new ongoing series based on the ideas, and that's Rey, the Valiant future samurai, which is such a cool concept. So it started as a backup feature in Magnus Robot Fighter, and it was so big that they started giving it its own play. The idea is really cool. It's that Rey is this, like, spirit guardian, like this Japanese of the nation of Japan, up through the 41st century. So we're taking quite a jump into the future here, into the 41st century, and it's passed down from father to son through the generations. So it's almost like an Iron Fist-y kind of thing, where Japan has become such an industrialized nation that the guardian spirit of Japan and all of, you know, all of its natural wonders has to be encapsulated into this one kind of magical dude with a couple swords that goes and fights for the people of Japan instead of the industry. And it's really cool. Like, it's really, it's an awesome idea. The later comic, the Valiant comic that was re-released, he's from the Bloodshot bloodline. So if you know about Bloodshot, and again, I want to do an entire issue devoted to Valiant, because I think Valiant has a really cool story up to and including the cocaine-addled Jim Shooter years. But there's a sentient kind of program, an AI program that controls all of Japan down to the clockwork motion of the way everything works, and that's what controls Rey, and Rey has to fight that control in order to protect Japan. And it's a really cool concept. Like, it's a super fun, super cool, but it falls really hard, probably more than anything else, into the idea that we have of quote unquote Neo Tokyo, where it's just this kind of sprawling technocracy with weird, like, aquarium restaurants and over top of slums, and all the rich people live on top and all the poor people live on bottom. You know, it's all of those tropes, but it's done really, really well. So I would look into this because it's pretty amazing.
That sounds...
It's really cool. It's super cool.
That's super cool.
And it's got all of the earmarks. You know, it's got it's the culmination of everything that we've talked about in the story arc. Because you have the samurai Bushido traditional ideas mixed with the future of Neo Tokyo, mixed with tradition bound to nature and the ideas surrounding nature, unfortunately, or not, told from an American point of view, but still really, really cool. So that would be a suggestion of mine. When we started talking about Neo Tokyo, it's the first thing that jumped into my mind was this character and its influence on everything. Now, Bob Layton was involved in 92, after the...
Babyface Bob Layton.
Was the writer of the Rey book before it was relaunched by Valiant. So Babyface Bob Layton was involved. You know, you got to check it out. That's all I'm saying. So what else you got, Cole? I kind of ran my mouth on that.
Oh, no, that's okay. Cause I stumbled on something in my attempts to find more, the future of the world as seen through the manga.
Right.
And one that struck me in a forum where somebody said, this is kind of a largely overlooked manga that I don't know if it necessarily hits dystopia so much as almost hints at some sort of sense of hope in a future that is otherwise dystopian. apparently, it's this manga called Seven Seeds. Confused with Seven Seas, but Seven Seeds that apparently... predicting that the end of the world truly is nigh from meteor bombardment, the Japanese government creates this. They basically put a bunch of folks in cryo sleep in five different groups. That then, once the dust settles, I guess they all wind up in different parts of the. From the looks of things, they probably just wind up in different parts of Japan. But each group winds up in an entirely different kind of environment, and have to try to become the future of mankind.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I guess, five different SETI Alpha 6s.
Are you ready to... That's cool, though. I like that. Are you ready to jump over and start talking about some of the Western comics that have included... thematically from those ideas? Because here's the thing, is we didn't see a lot of dystopian... here's one that was a utopian future long before the idea of dystopian future during the Dark Ages of comics that maybe we hadn't thought about.
Ah,
the world of the Legion of Superheroes.
That is a very good point. That is truly a utopian future with dystopian pockets. You might encounter the odd dystopian planet, or that the fact that Suicide Slum is still a damn thing that far in the future. What the hell, Metropolis?
You'd think that with all the public works projects, they would have got that worked out by now.
The infinite technology of 7,000 species, and they still have a damn Suicide Slum.
I'm
calling you out, future Metropolis.
I'm thoroughly amused by this. Just thoroughly amused. So that was one, right? We were struggling to find one, but I just found one. But the other one that comes close, and I don't even know if this counts because it's so far into the future, is that DC 1 million.
Oh.
That we had talked about with Batman's octopus telepathy martial arts that just keeps coming back around. But Cole, I want to invoke something that we did as a comic book, that we allowed to happen as a comic book reading society, and I think it's time we took ownership of what we did. Okay. Marvel 2099.
Oh, why did that never occur to me?
That is absolutely.
Oh yes, it's like the American-born Japanese dystopian future.
Attempt at the Japanese dystopian future, and we had characters that remain to this day. By the way, we have characters like Spider-Man 2099. I just recently read a comic book with Doom 2099 in it in the current day. And one that always struck me as very odd, and that was Ravage 2099. Cole, are you familiar with Ravage 2099?
Sadly, I am. I'm actually getting this mental image of Ravage in his ratty trench coat and those weird fleshy pedipalps.
Ravage 2099 was the encapsulation of everything in the American zeitgeist about a dystopian future, all rattled into one character, created by none other than Stan Lee, of course. The character was an ex-CEO of a company called Eco, that was supposed to combat polluters. It's so bad. It's just so, all of it's awful. It's the worst. He has like a shotgun and laser blasts out of his eyes and just anything you could possibly imagine, because he had surgery and was exposed to the Hell Rock. Come on, guys. What the hell is this?
Oh, it goes on and on. To explore the character is to imagine some just exasperated child in this breathy explanation of so many ideas, and it's just like, oh, and he's got this and that, and on Thursdays he does this,
and on Thursdays. But you know what, you're not wrong. This was the American idea in the early 90s of what the dystopian future was going to look like,
with only Marvel characters,
only to be outmatched by what might be Western comic books' greatest example of an actual dystopian future, Batman: The Dark Knight Returns.
That is literally the Akira of Batman.
the Akira of Batman of the Akira of Batman. That's a cyclical loop. That's a Mobius trip that never ends. The Batman Akira of Batman Akira is, my head just exploded.
It's Bat Akira.
And a lot of the themes are very similar to what you would see when you start getting into the idea of Akira, Ghost in the Shell, all of the ideas that we see. And guess who wrote it, Cole?
Oh, gosh.
Who wrote Batman Returns, Cole?
Oh, well, you know.
You know.
None other than the heavily influenced by manga, none other than the kind of, he's sort of like the manga artist of American comics anyway, so it's little wonder it's Bat Manga. You know, you have the Frank Miller.
You have the Frank Miller. Back around to the very first issue we ever had of this story arc, Frank Miller. went from introducing ninjas, went from introducing the idea, and I would go so far as to say, as well as Eastman and Laird, in that same vein. Because again, when we're talking about Daredevil, we're talking, you know, what are we talking about when we're talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? We've got to talk about Daredevil.
Yeah.
So much in the same vein as Eastman and Laird, Frank Miller introduced us to that culture, to those ideas, to how cool they are. You know, we all know he's insane, so we're not gonna hold that against him in this point. Bringing it back around into a future that is so heavily influenced by manga and Akira and those future ideas that we get something like Dark Knight Returns.
Absolutely. I think the one begets the other.
Oh, I think it absolutely is.
Rather obviously, yes.
I'm glad we brought that back around. I really am.
That is. We've gone full circle there. I do want to touch on a few other elements of manga that just sort of came up and caught my eye.
Okay.
Within the context of the future, be it dystopian or otherwise, as seen through manga. This one is rather fascinating. I found it in this great article, apparently not strangely, ironically, from Barnes & Noble's website.
Hey.
titled, "We Have Seen the Future and It Is Awful." Essential cyberpunk manga.
That's fantastic.
There's even a little subheadline, Neo Tokyo Drift.
Oh, that's good. I wish I would have thought of that.
Yeah, stealing my thunder.
God damn it.
Years ago, back when we were working at Diamond, myself and Frank Manticore, breeder extraordinaire.
Sure, sure.
Chris Oz Fulton. No, actually, he didn't. He wasn't part of that. But some of the folks, one of the guys we worked with at Diamond back in the day, challenged us, those of us who are these creative types who are always talking about all this crap we were going to do one of these days. He just said, you know, let's put your money where your mouth is. I'll pay for the publication and we'll put together a mini comic open to everybody who wanted to do anything. That was, you know, this was a wonderful little project that gave us Spasm, the superpowered anabolic steroid man. Which is one of the most brilliant things that came out of this book. And then that's where I premiered Kid Tapeworm as an actual comic, which I continually want to revisit one of these days because I have so many great ideas for a Kid Tapeworm series that go beyond where I didn't even really know where I was headed when I did the first one. But the name of this book, the only thing I was just kind of curious about what exactly why thing here was the book was called Blame.
Okay.
And it was an anthology, but you know, I guess that spoke to the guy who was doing this. You know, he was one of these people that just, you know, anti everything. You know, everybody was out to get him type of guy. So, you know, I guess it fit. And anyway, I bring that up because apparently there's this anime, or sorry, manga, rather, titled Blame.
Okay.
And from the description of it, they describe this, like, it takes place in this kind of cyberpunk dystopian future where a decaying Earth is, the centerpiece is this city that's perpetually being built by city-building machines in a kind of, what's described as a mega version of the Winchester House.
That's fantastic.
So there's all these, it's just this labyrinth of levels and things that aren't necessarily connected and probably a lot of false corners and dead ends and stuff. And it apparently is a really, you know, heavy atmosphere kind of
sure
dystopia. But I just love the idea of this, you know, mega city that's just, you know, probably somebody's idea of a good idea that went awry somewhere. And it sort of suggests a kind of self-perpetuating city that they didn't get all the bugs out.
Right. That's awesome.
And of course, I think, did we mention Battle Angel Alita? That was another biggie back in the,
no.
in the day. Was still around.
There's so many we could talk about, though. Like, oh, I tried to narrow it. That's the hardest thing about a lot of these issues is narrowing it down. Oh, before we go, because we're creeping. We're creeping up on the end. I wanted to talk about Six String Samurai.
Oh, yes, you'd mentioned that, and we... So we should probably give that a little bit further exploration.
So I'm going just to spend this time selling you on the idea that you should find this thing and watch it. Okay? The story revolves around this. Okay, so there's an actor named Jeffrey Falcon. Jeffrey Falcon appears in some Japanese movies. This was 1998. Okay?
All right.
So the idea is 57, Soviet Union. Nukes the United States. Boom. Done. Everything collapses. And the last bastion of civilization in the United States that isn't an irradiated wasteland is Las Vegas, otherwise known as Lost Vegas. Las Vegas is ruled by a king.
Okay, I want to point out here really quick, as yes. comic book things go, where you have a, you know, where you're kind of renaming an existing city for effect.
Sure.
I can get behind Lost Vegas in precisely the way that I can't get behind The Pit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember The Pit from the New Universe where
yes.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania got
yeah.
nuked?
Yes.
And I think part of the reason that I can't get behind this at all is The Pit. Was not only did they copyright The Pit, apparently one aspect of The Pit juice.
What?
On a comic book about The Pit, there was a series of indicia pointing out that The Pit and Pit juice were registered trademarks of Marvel Comics.
So it's Marvel Comics The Pit in the same way that it's Marvel Comics The Black Knight?
Yeah, it's Marvel's The Pit.
Right, Marvel's The Pit. All right, I'm getting back to it.
All right.
So, Lost Vegas, which the only way that could be better is if they called it Lost Wages. Las Vegas is ruled by a king. That king is none other than King Elvis.
Of course it would be.
Elvis, Las Vegas, irradiated wasteland everywhere but, and for 40 years... the Soviet Red Army lays siege to Las Vegas to no avail. Wasteland outside, marauders, gangs. Inside, King Elvis holding court while the Red Army, much like the Red Queen, tries to knock down the walls and can't. Splash forward, 40 years in the future.
Okay.
King Elvis dies, leaving a power vacuum in Las Vegas. Somewhere in the wasteland, it's announced over the radio that King Elvis has died. Buddy, whom looks strikingly like Buddy Holly, a lone samurai swordsman in the waste plains. All right, and I'm not reading this, by the way. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, and then I realized that I could talk about it tonight, and you best be damned if I don't do it. Saves a child's life. So every damn samurai trope is in this movie, Cole. Everyone saves a kid that goes by the name of Kid from a bunch of marauders in the wasteland.
So I'm just wondering if somewhere in Las Vegas, there's the Lone Wolf Club.
Well, sort of, where there is, so he plays the guitar. He travels the wasteland with a samurai and a guitar, dressed like Buddy Holly, looks like Buddy Holly. Trying to make his way to fill the power vacuum in Las Vegas. He's being tracked by this gang leader who plays heavy metal by the name of Death.
Of course.
So he has to fight his way to Las Vegas. There are literally, there's a bowling team that's bounty hunters that are trying to find this kid. there is a people-eating, like, nuclear family out in the wasteland, and everybody's trying to stop him, not to mention mutants and the Russians. And at the end, he finally almost makes it there and has to do a samurai sword fight with Death, the heavy metal playing antagonist, to get...
Naturally.
Yeah.
And one would expect no less.
And I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, because it doesn't matter. It's a crap movie and a crap comic book, but it's awesome. Buddy dies in the fight. The kid picks up Buddy's clothes and his Buddy Holly glasses and walks towards Lost Wages. It's fantastic, Cole! It had a $2 million budget and it made $100,000.
Oh, wow.
I don't know where.
Gosh.
I saw this on a bootleg of a... I saw this on the holiday special version at a convention once, bootleg VHS tape, and I've never been able to see it again. And I have the comic book because they, what was the name of Awesome Comics? It was Awesome Comics, right? Was Rob Liefeld's later, you know what I mean? Yeah, it was Awesome Comics. Dan Fraga and Rob Liefeld, Matt Hawkins rewrote it. Basically, it's the same movie. Or it's the same, you know, it's his further adventures, but it only got, I think it only got one issue, and I have it, and it makes me very, very happy. And if I could find Six String Samurai at a reasonable price, I would buy it right now, and I suggest everybody else doing so. And that's the way I want, that's my final contribution to this show. So Cole, please add something that's not this. Because I will talk about it for another hour and a half.
Oh, well, in that case, I better find something pretty damn pronto, because, you know, like so much of this arc, I'm going in largely blind. But it's not a total... It's not a totally alien atmosphere to me. But I think that the come away for this is dystopia outsells utopia in the modern world. Probably, I would wager to say, post-1980 some odd, things, you know, the concepts of Star Trek and the Legion of Superheroes as they stood in their day simply failed to hold water for an audience that... A good analog would be that line from, like, way back, like, what, 70 years ago when The Simpsons first started?
Yeah.
And Lisa met her hero, Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Yep.
And he had admonished her that the blues wasn't about making yourself feel better. It was about making everyone else feel worse. And I think in many ways, the core concepts behind, like, say, cyberpunk, where it's, you know, high technology and low society.
Yeah.
The idea there is it could be, and if you want to extrapolate this as future history, it will be a lot worse. So just, you know, stiff upper lip there, kids, because your grandkids are going to live in a shit world.
It's over. Hang it up so, now.
So extrapolate that Akira, the characters in Akira, are the grandchildren or the great-great-great-grandchildren of that guy that survived Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Good night.
Then yes, indeed.
Oh, I should have kept talking about Six String Samurai. Good lord.
You're going to live in a shit world.
You just went all Eastwood and Gran Torino on everybody.
Yeah, I was going to walk up to our audience, you know, and do the pistol finger. And
you're going to live in a shit world.
You may think you've got it bad, punk, but if you've got any offspring, and they have offspring, offspring have offspring, I'll tell you right now, punk, they're going to live in a shit world.
The good news is, you can still buy Six String Samurai on DVD on Amazon. So,
oh, thank God.
So maybe the world isn't so shit after all. Cole, why don't you go ahead and plug us up, and we are going to put a giant city on top of this story
That's
arc
right.
and call it a day.
You know, if the best thing to do when you live in such a world, just pave over that world and build a brand new world right on top of it.
That's right. Bury
because
the ghosts.
If you can't
of the
see it, it's not that bad. And
oh
if there's
my
one
God.
Thing that shit does well, it's fertilized. So there you have it.
That's right. All right. Tell them where they can find us.
So,
and where...
if we haven't completely put you off by Lord. Now, you can find us, of course, here at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at HeyKidsComics@gmail.com and watch for the extremely rare tweets, the dystopian tweets on at the Jedi Cole U on Twitter.
That's right.
There's a very active other accounts that Andy handles. You can tell what Andy's behind because they're more actively utilized than what I start at the moment. Because I'm about to bury myself wholeheartedly into AllCon 2018.
Yeah, you are.
You have heard us talk extensively about AllCon, and we will again in the near future because AllCon is back again. 14th year, folks.
Lord, that is a long time.
I have been involved for 14 years.
14 of those years you have been involved.
In one capacity or another, I have been a part of AllCon and could not be happier. So if you can't go check it out, all-con.net or .com, apparently. Either one will get you there. I'm really thrilled because Kathy Coleman and Wesley Urey from The Land of the Lost are already confirmed guests. They were at Infinicon last year.
That's
and
awesome.
Just, I had the good fortune of being able to panel with both of them on Match Game that Bacon Samurai put on.
Yeah.
They're so much fun, and I'm very hopeful that I can get them on one of my talk shows at AllCon this year and maybe get them to play along with our new talk show game show, You Can't Win. But do check that out. I'm, of course, the head of Games and Theory, the game show track at AllCon, and we got some killer game shows coming. And I'm happy to say that at least, fingers crossed, Onliners will be back.
Possibly. Possibly.
And there's a fighting chance that Don't Lose Your Geek Card, the Hey Kids Comics Edition, will feature the entire Hey Kids Comics cast.
There is the same chance that that's going to happen as there is a post-apocalyptic future occurring. Put it that way. Draw your own conclusions from that.
No, I'm not sure what to think.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, Cole. That's the point. You never know what to think with me. Where am I? I don't know. Do you know where I am? Nobody knows where I am. I'm in the future. I'm in your past, Cole. I'm in your past.
I'm in your future past.
I'm in your future past, Cole. You don't know where I am. You know who I am. I'm your future, who past. All right.
The
Is there any other way? Oh, don't you do
You're
a live
not the boss
something?
Of me. What?
Don't you do a live something somewhere that you want to talk to
oh,
people
Oh, yeah.
About?
I guess I should tell people about the live side of the Jedi Cole Universe, the live streaming over at DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. You can catch myself and Eddie Medina on the Rantcore Pit live, and also as you're listening to this on Friday, Sunday, the Rantcore Pit, the original pre-recorded version, the audio version, if you will, is returning to the Jedi Cole Universe after
yes.
a god-awful long hiatus.
Yes, excited.
So we are very thrilled to return to you with a very fun episode, and also on the third Sundays of every month preceding the Rancor Pit Live, you can catch my new live show, Isle of Toys, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., where I, good night, the next one will be the seventh monthly episode.
Mm-hmm.
We have already talked about Transformers, Vintage Star Wars, console games, was the latest episode, which unfortunately was not live due to technical difficulties, but will be on the archive very soon. And I had the good fortune to have console gaming author Brett Weiss as my guest, and good Lord, the man knows his console games. So if you get a chance, check out Straight Outta Console, Isle of Toys, Aisle 6.
That's right. Super excited. All right, well, let's get out of here. Let's let these people, dig their bomb shelters in their backyard and start squirreling away their Alpo for the coming apocalypse.
That's right. Well, let me tell you right now, the next issue slated, we've got a couple of possibilities, just depending on scheduling and how much of a certain television show I was able to get through.
God.
In a week. I've got a reprieve lined up, but we have two episodes that are the possible topics for the next issue, and both of them are far more fun and uplifting. And well, one of them is anyway. The other one's about teen angst.
I'll take teen angst right now. Yeah. I'll take it after this.
Woo. That's a step up. Just ask Clint Eastwood.
Damn it! All right, I'm leaving it. A good humor podcast knows when to end, and that's it. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Join us next week for more Hank Hits Comics.